unobserved, picking their way carefully along the edge of the sea marsh of Comacchio. They move slowly across the landscape, past shallow lagoons filled with masses of black weed. They pause from time to time. One of their number is so feeble he is barely able to continue. Ravenna, their destination, is only a day or so distant, but the concern on the faces of this man's companions questions whether he'll live that long. It is a deadly season to travel this coastal route from Venice, not for fear of bandits and violent attack. A more insidious, unseen killer comes with September and the first autumn rains. The poisonous miasma of malaria. The old man to whom they show such concern would be of middle height, if years passed in scholarship had not given him a back arched like the span of a bridge. When he regains sufficient strength to continue, his gait is gentle and grave, more used to cloisters and courtly halls than the tussocks of seagrass beneath his feet. His face is long, his nose proud and aquiline, the jaw determined, with a thoughtful, protruding lower lip. Sickness gives him a drawn appearance, and there is sadness etched about his mouth in deep lines. His eyes are large and melancholy, in a dark complexion. His hair and beard thick, black, and curly. Much as if, so the gossips of Ravenna would have it, he came and went to hell as he pleased, bringing news of its inhabitants, and his hair and beard had been crisped by the heat and smoke there. The journey is nearly over, but it does not have the looked-for ending. The party's peacemaking embassy to the most serene republic has been unsuccessful. Dante Alighieri, around whom the companions hover anxiously, played a small role. He did not speak on Ravenna's behalf. Only his presence was required, sufficient alone to give the venture gravitas. Perhaps he never intended to. They will say he did not speak because the Venetians so feared his reputation for eloquence and oratory, they would not let him. More than that, the Republic would not let him return in one of their ships. The fear was Dante might subvert their admiral, so his embassy was forced to take the dangerous coastal route from Venice. The irony of that well-invented story would not be lost on Dante. To die silent because of a reputation for eloquence has an echo of the eternity of anguish the poet has the wretched sinners of his Inferno suffer. The journey has another unlooked-for ending. In 20 years of banishment, Dante has not given up his hope of regaining Florence, though in these last bitter years of exile, Ravenna and his patron, Guido Novello da Polenta, have treated him well. An unwelcome realization creeps over Dante as the fever bites. The possibility that the Cammin di Nostra Vita, the road of life he travels, will not end in the city of his birth. His most fervent wish, to be crowned with the poet's laurel wreath at the black and white baptistry before his fellow Florentines, is slipping away. To die loved and revered as one of the greatest poets the world had known or would know in Ravenna is to him the greatest cruelty of his exile. They travel slowly, but the lagoons are far behind them by the time the mist has fled before the morning sun, and the white seabirds of the marshes, disturbed by the traveller's passage, settle to their feeding. Before long, the little embassy is swallowed by the mysterious gloom and twilight groves of the vast and ancient Pineta forest that stretches to the north and south of Ravenna. With the dying day, the Porta Serrata of Ravenna is close enough for them to send a runner on ahead to prepare for his arrival. There is little they can do. By the time Dante is brought to bed in Ravenna, he's shaking so much with fever he cannot stand. He's fed salty, bitter tinctures to ease the recurring bouts. He is made to sip infusions from the larch tree harvested in the Pineta, and from the shrub box grown by the monks. In between, he's bled from a vein in the foot to restore the natural balance of his humours, the four bodily fluids that govern health and sickness. But